Alan Clarkson Weekly Review, Current Technology Analysis, Show Number 33, June 3rd and 4th, 2006, WVTexan.podomatic.com. This week's intro music is available on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. The artist is The Alice Project, the track, Lily. In this week's show, we look at the changeable web and system virtualization. The buzz is Linux for real people with support. A legal case involving text message spam, and for the Because You Can site, Freedom Toaster. So on to the show. The changeable web and system virtualization. In the last episode, we looked at application virtualization, or using a software layer to protect your computer from some of the very nasty implications of installing software you're not entirely sure you want hanging around forever. Virtualization, however, is a much more widespread technique currently when realized as a full system environment that can be loaded, moved, operated, and changed on the fly. Full system virtualization may do as much as Web 2.0 browser-based delivery of applications to change the way end users think about the desktop operating system and its portability. There are two general types of full system virtualization: emulation and simulation. Emulation refers to building an environment that has all the characteristics of another without actually using the emulated platform. A popular Linux emulator is Wine for Windows Emulator that allows Windows programs to be installed and run on a Linux computer. Virtual PC for Mac performs a similar function. A major drawback to emulators is that because they're not really the target platform for the application, they tend to run more slowly and often cannot handle extremely robust applications. Simulation, on the other hand, holds quite a bit of promise for the future of virtualization. In a simulated environment, an entire hardware platform is made available to multiple guest operating systems. The hardware is simulated for the installation. No sticky emulation problems here. As far as the installed operating system is concerned, it's running on a real hardware configuration. This abstraction allows the installed program to run with all of the system calls intended by the original developers. It allows users to install programs, run them, even completely screw them up without fear of trashing the original installation. One could, for example, install a Linux distribution on a Windows virtual machine and completely crash the Linux system without affecting the underlying Windows OS. Or one could load multiple instances of Windows for testing different applications. Simulation is most closely related to the notion of time sharing, familiar to anyone with either experience of computing in the 1960s and 70s or an interest in computer history. Simulation uses the internal clock cycles of a computer's processor to simulate a completely separate instance of the underlying hardware. Each virtual machine is unaware that it is sharing space with others, and each cannot access the other's resources. This could be particularly useful for working with buggy programs or for the truly virus paranoid. Trash your operating system? No problem. Just load a new virtual machine. The notion that the desktop operating system is not sacrosanct and not the gatekeeper to the computer may help blur the line between what is in here and what is out there. The operating system just doesn't matter as much if the applications become neutral. For the changeable web, there is a definite advantage to having this mindset take greater hold. If users expect data and performance rather than this computer or that application, we've moved a step further in comfort with the fully configurable experience. See the show notes for links to system virtualization software vendors and open source projects, and a discussion of virtualization in more depth. The buzz is Linux for human beings, with support. While Negroponte and crew continue to work on the $100 laptop, now reportedly priced at $130, with the laudable goal of providing access to everyone, another group has put together one of the most user-friendly versions of Linux available to date. The Ubuntu project has been gaining popularity as a Linux distribution based on the community-supported Debian tree, but is quickly emerging as the distribution of choice for entry into the world of Linux. Ubuntu comes in several flavors with specific foci. Edubuntu for education, Kubuntu with the KDE interface, Zubuntu with a slimmed-down XFCE interface, and the full-flavored Ubuntu. Each version has its own community, and most importantly, has available professional support plans for those wishing to have someone to choke when it doesn't go right. I've been working with all four versions since the most recent release, June 1st, and cannot say enough about the embedded support for all the hardware platforms I've installed them on, including built-in wireless support on an IBM ThinkPad. The graphics are slick and polished, and the standard programs give a completely usable environment. OpenOffice.org 2.0, Firefox, Xemian Evolution, and other very well-written and community-supported applications. All of these distributions, or any of these distributions, is an excellent stepping-off point from Windows to Linux, especially on older hardware, and that's where the buzz comes in. As opposed to the more commercial Red Hat and SUSE distributions, Ubuntu seems to be aimed squarely at the non-technology crowd who just want an operating system that can be installed and used in a straightforward manner. The goal of the Ubuntu project is to create a distribution that is, as their tagline suggests, for human beings. The software is available for download, or you can order free CDs from the website. See the show notes for links to the Ubuntu site, as well as several articles providing more in-depth coverage of the features and personalities behind this distribution. The legal case is Jaffe v. Acacia Mortgage Corporation, Arizona Court of Appeals 2005. This week's legal case, an appeal in the Arizona Court of Appeals from September of 2005, the court delineates a prohibition on sending unsolicited text messages to cell phones from an automated dialing service. The opinion relies on the text of the 1991 Telephone Consumer Protection Act, TCPA, which specifically prohibits the use of an automated dialing system in solicitation. Mr. Jaffe received text messages on separate occasions from Acacia Mortgage Company offering low-cost mortgage services. Mr. Jaffe sued for violation of the TCPA, arguing that Acacia had used an automated system to communicate with his cell phone. In this appeal, the court agreed, affirming the Superior Court's ruling and detailing the legal reasoning for its decision. In the published opinion, the court also outlined why this particular set of circumstances was not preempted by the CAN-SPAM Act of 2001. The technology of short message service, or SMS, operates something like this. The sender initiates an off-network email by combining the telephone number and the domain name of the phone operator, for example, 304-555-1212 at singular.net. The email is received by the wireless operator and formatted as a text message, which is forwarded on to the subscriber's telephone. The court found that this system, and in particular the required addressing scheme, required intent to communicate with a cellular telephone, despite Acacia's objection that the text message was not a two-way voice conversation and therefore not covered under the TCPA. The court reasoned that because the message was intended to be delivered to Mr. Jaffe's cellular telephone, it was necessarily a communication, and so fell under the jurisdiction of the TCPA. The appeals court applied FCC statements and legislative history to further establish this interpretation of the SMS transmission. Because the message was generated from an automated system, was unsolicited, and was sent as communication to a device protected under the TCPA, the appeals court ruled in favor of the original plaintiff, upholding the Superior Court's ruling granting partial summary judgment to Mr. Jaffe. The case demonstrates the court's ability to adapt to changing technology and methodology when combating unwanted communications. It is particularly comforting, as a consumer, to note that the court upheld the ruling in part because the customer, Mr. Jaffe, in this case, bears at least some of the cost of receiving the communication. Standard text messaging fees apply. See the show notes for a direct link to the published case opinion. The Because You Can site is the Freedom Toaster. Currently available only in South Africa, the Freedom Toaster is an interesting free and open source distribution device targeted at those who wish to use open source software but have neither the facility or knowledge to download and create CDs of installation files. At the site linked in the show notes, you can view full schematics for the device that, when set up in a public space, allows individuals to bring their own media, writable CDs for example, and create installation devices or installation CDs without the need for a broadband connection to download the files. This is a particularly welcome device in areas like much of South Africa where internet access is metered and a 650 megabyte download, a CD's worth, may be prohibitively expensive even if a broadband connection is available in the first place. Download the schematics and build your own. See the show notes for the link or visit www.freedomtoaster.org. Well, that's all for this week. Check back next week for another review. Remember, all the show notes are available at www.protopage.com/weekly-review. And if you get a minute, leave a comment on the posting site. It'll be nice to hear from you. We're going out now with the Alice Project from the PodSafe Music Network with Lily.